Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Today is Thursday, May the 29th. We are in the middle of week 10 of the 2025 Major League Baseball and fantasy season. I am Vlad Sedler. You can find me at RotoGut on the social medias. And I'm joined this week by my co-host, as always, Jason Anthony at Boom62. Jay, we are in the doldrums of May and coming into June. How are you feeling?
What up, Vlad? A long time no pod. I missed you, buddy. Nice to have a little morning pod here on Thursday morning. One third through the season, we are officially in the grind. You know, it's kind of, it goes through ebbs and flows. You're excited for draft season, and then you're excited, you know, after the first couple of weeks, and you kind of get down, and then the teams start doing good. And now it's just, okay, how do I maximize my teams? You know, usually first day of June, you really know where your team stands as a chance. So now the hard work really begins. And, you know, I know most everybody's used about half their fab already too. So now it's kind of rationing out for the last, you know, 17 weeks of fab, which, you know, having half the fab for 17 weeks, and now it's a little more challenging. So I'm doing good. Excited to talk some baseball. Good to see you on the camera here, and let's get rolling.
Yes. You mentioned about the ebbs and flows, and obviously there's no more exciting time than draft season and opening day and getting everything ready. And, you know, how are people doing or feeling, those who maybe got off to a hot start and now they're just seeing the teams essentially plateau or just, you know, not getting the results they're expecting, even when their teams may have solid bones, right? Or especially if you've been waiting for some players to come around. I mean, just thinking about George Kirby and Spencer Strider, both of those guys this week. I mean, these were high draft picks. Obviously, we didn't know Kirby was going to get hurt when we drafted him. And then, of course, we knew what the case was with Strider and, of course, the downside. And so far, it's really been all downside. I mean, perhaps there's some good signs as they are healthy now. But in general, I mean, it's crazy. All these starting pitchers that we've been sort of waiting on to, quote unquote, rescue our team. And so far, it's not happening. I mean, how do we feel about that? And is there light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real big game theory question. I know draft season, I thought the cost on Spencer Strider was too low. So I have a couple big shares of him. And I have a share of George Kirby, too. And so far, like you alluded to, it's been very underwhelming. You know, it kind of brings up the question, and, you know, take this with a grain of salt, because we are only one third of the way through the season. So now you have, quote unquote, have a healthy Strider and George Kirby for two thirds of the season. So this could pay off. But stashing these guys, not only are you putting draft capital in, you're putting a roster spot in. And whether it's a 12 team or 15 team in the NFBC, that roster spot is extremely valuable. And then when they do come back, they are usually not very good for the first couple starts. And then I just got burnt by George Kirby starting him at the Nationals, thinking it was going to be a good start, and he got blown up. So how long do you have to wait for these guys to be usable? How long before you really get the payoff of them? And is it worth it? And, you know, I'm leaning towards, you know, strategy wise, really trying to avoid the stashes unless it's really cheap and you can move on from it. A good example of that is I picked up Ranger Suarez in a main event and held on to him. And he's been really good. But the draft, there was no draft capital in that. That was a fab pickup. And he was an easy cut, where you're not cutting Spencer Strider unless he's out for the year. You're not cutting George Kirby, no matter how bad he is. I mean, kind of similar to Sandy Alcantara. I don't even know what to do with him in my 15s. In a 12, I think he's an easy cut. In 15s, I think you got to roster him and just bench him. But he has been probably the worst starting pitcher in the major leagues. I know he's a little different because he was starting the season healthy, but another guy coming back from injury.
And this extends out into the hitters as well. One big takeaway for me, as I'm looking at the snapshot at this point in the season, and I'm looking at the guys that are on the IL, a lot of them are players that are quite frequently on the IL. And a lot of them were in the the Dr. Dave list of be careful. And there really is something to be said about that. I know Dr. Dave may get some crap on Twitter and all, but I mean, look at these guys, the Byron Buxton thing. It's not a big deal. It's a 7-day concussion. He's about to return. I mean, Roy Lewis got hurt literally on day one. Mike Trout, there was that little period of time where he was smashing in the preseason. We thought everything would be okay. You forget the nagging lower body injuries he's had over the years. He is on the IL. Parker Meadows, always an issue. He's on the IL. You've got, the list goes on and on. You've got Tyler O'Neill. You got Jazz Chisholm. There are a lot of pitchers in this.
Corey Seager.
There is something to this.
Yeah.
Injuries beget injuries. And even if, the body, it's all, like you say, it's all connected. There really is something to be said about a strategy where, hey, these hype fun names, Yordan Alvarez, add to the mix. They're all hurt. And maybe at some point, maybe they're just all hurt together at this point and they'll get back to it. But I mean, the chances of Tyler O'Neill getting hurt again in a couple of weeks, because he's built like a brick. And when he takes a swing, he, tears a back muscle. That's part of the game. And maybe these are just not players we need to have in our portfolio.
Yeah. And, the other thing with these guys, when they come back off the IL, they are not very good for the first week, at least when they come back. Now, there's no hard, fast rule, but you get excited to get, Corey Seager off the IL. He needs to get his game legs under him when he comes back. So you're excited to put in your lineup, but are you surprised when you get a 1-for-15, that week, or, a 2-for-25? So these injured guys are injured guys. Now, they're injured guys until they're not, right? Injuries are not as predictive as we believe, but there are certain injury prone guys that are very predictive, like, Tyler O'Neill, Byron Buxton. Those two guys are going to get injured every year. There's guys that were injury prone and now they're playing every game. So, take it with a grain of salt, but these roster spots are so valuable. Stashing is so difficult. You got to maximize at bats, and then you got to maximize production when they're getting at bats. So it's really challenging.
And we have to be cutthroat on the cuts, especially in shallower leagues. I know 15 teamers, it's a bit tougher, but in 12 teamers, I mean, there is a point where, listen, guy like Tyler O'Neill, sure, there will be a stretch where he goes bananas and hits 4 home runs in a week. And listen, if you're going to be waiting around for that all season, it might be tough. And the other thing with something like that is Tyler O'Neill is most likely to do it when you think he's coming back you don't think he's coming back on a Monday. Then he returns on that Monday. You have him on the bench. Then he hits his 4 home runs in that series. And then by the time you get him back in your lineup on Friday, he's already back on the IL. So sort of story of the lives of the ton owners.
Whipsaw. It's definitely a challenge trying to time that correctly.
So we are going to talk a little bit about the June schedule and the matchups that we have for the teams. I do a column over here at FTN, gut feelings. And so every month, or at least last month, what I did was break down every series for every team for the month of April and graded them. So we'll kind of go over those grades, look at what I have going on for May, and see if we can get some takeaways on that. Before we do, just a little bit of injury news, some players coming back, including some of the guys we talked about. Byron Buxton for the Twins. He is going to return on Friday. Matt Wallner was originally, the plan was for him to return at some point this week, and that still might be the case this weekend. But so far in AAA, he's flashing that power that we did not see when he was up in the majors leading off. He's got 4 home runs in 5 games over at AAA. And they can really use these guys and these bats, because you look at this Twins lineup and it's just as it's not very fearsome, and they have not been all that effective.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Fangraphs, the lineup tracker, and that Twins lineup it looks like a AAA squad for the most part. So they need as much health as they can. They don't have much depth. There's been some guys producing, and obviously they're winning a lot of games because they're pitching. But that's not sustained to last unless they get these guys healthy. I know I got a Byron Buxton share on a good team. So again, excited to get him back, but not expecting much this weekend as far as production.
And by the way, Royce Lewis has been pretty quiet since returning, and down in the lineup in 6th and 7th, essentially no power, not really driving in any runs. And someone asked me a question earlier this week about what to do with somebody like Royce Lewis. And in my opinion, of course, it's always a matter of what might be available as an alternative and on the wire. But I mean, in 15 teamers, I think you're holding him. I think we can get away with benching him, depending on the matchup, of course. But there will you hope that the time comes when he gets going is before he gets hurt. So that's always the possibility. But I don't really see a world where, unless it's a 10-teamer perhaps, that Royce Lewis is a drop at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's too much upside there with a Royce Lewis. You know, his per game numbers have been amazing throughout his career. He had some quote I read last night, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but he just feels like getting a hit would be a miracle at this point. He's really struggling and he's really fighting it, but we know there's ebbs and flows in baseball. As bad as he's struggling for these, you know, this first 4 weeks back, the next 6 weeks could be a monster if he stays healthy. And you need to play him in 15s when he's healthy, unless you just are lucky enough to have a lot of depth, which very few teams do.
For the Miami Marlins, the surging Marlins, at least as far as some fantasy value over there, Agustin Ramirez has been incredible, had an excellent performance on Wednesday night. They are going to get an important player back to the top of their lineup, and that's their speedster, another guy that has a long history of injuries, and that's Xavier Edwards. He's going to return shortly here, but he is going to play second base. Otto Lopez has played so well at shortstop while Edwards has been on the IL, and Edwards' defensive numbers had been horrendous, so that's the way they're going to play it. And we know that Edwards, you know, he's got his 11 stolen bases or whatever, but overall for the draft spot that we paid for him, which is 120 to 150 ADP, he hasn't really earned it, especially since he is a zero at home runs. So I don't know, little things like that, like getting back to your position where you're comfortable, sometimes that can make a difference offensively in getting your swing back. So we'll see if this is going to positively impact Xavier Edwards for fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, the Marlins are so known for making good decisions. So let's put our second baseman at shortstop and our shortstop at second base. What can go wrong? You know, I have some Otto Lopez. I have a Xavier Edwards share. So the dual eligibility, I guess, is not a negative. But, you know, Agustin Ramirez, man, I watch him. And it looks like prime Gary Sanchez when he was on the Yankees, that one-handed finish, that bat speed. Do you see that too? Or am I just, you know?
No, it's real.
Yeah. I mean, you guys good.
Yeah. I heard somebody, you know, just maybe some SHIT posting, but that he's better than Jazz. Somebody was saying.
Well, Jazz hasn't been playing. So the statement is accurate. We'll see when Jazz gets back.
You mentioned Corey Seager earlier. He has returned to this horrendous Texas Rangers lineup, a lineup that, I mean, you would think they couldn't have gotten any worse. But in the month of April, they had a team WRC plus of 87. So far this season, it's 72. In May, it's 72. The only team that has been worse offensively is the Rockies. And it's shocking because we were so excited about this team, about this offense, and you know, they fired their hitting coach, and just it's been an absolute mess there. And they get Corey Seager back, you know, hopefully he sticks around. But really, you know, the interesting stuff here is they're struggling other hitters. Adolis Garcia, I mean, he's hitting in the bottom third of the lineup. Marcus Semien looks completely toast. He's completely hitting at the bottom of the lineup, hitting ninth. So are there any hopes of turnarounds here? Alejandro Osuna, the rookie, how long does he stay up? Evan Carter, man, I really just am not a fan of that guy. I mean, does he come back and make an impact? Like, what's going on with these Rangers and what do they need?
I mean, was it Sam Haggerty isn't saving them? But the Rangers have to be one of the biggest surprises in the major leagues as far as a downer. You look at a Wyatt Langford, you know, where he was going and the excitement with him, and then the Corey Seager, that lineup kind of top to bottom, them signing Jock Peterson, you know, looked like was going to be one of the more prolific lineups in the major leagues. And they're not only bad, they're being mentioned with the Colorado Paste Eaters. That's, you know, really high company. I know I do have multiple shares of Corey Seager. You know, I thought getting the hernia surgery fixed last year, he was due for a big year. But the hamstring, the soft tissue stuff, injured guys get injured, as we were talking about before. I really need him and Adelis especially to start picking it up the last 4 months, because you gave, it's a lot of draft capital for what you're getting right now. And that team has just been anemic.
It's really funny how Jake Berger just needed three games in AAA to just like wake up his bat. It was like the, you know, the shock of going down, just, you know, not a far drive or whatever. But yeah, to get your stuff and just, you know, hey, I've been playing in the majors, crushing 30 bombs. All of a sudden I'm going down to the minors. That was really quick. But since then, he has been absolutely mashing, and he's hitting higher in the lineup, hitting fourth, fifth, sixth recently. And then Adolis Garcia. So the interesting thing is we saw a big decline for him last year with for his bat speed, for example. And just his, you know, his isolated power has dropped considerably. I mean, this is a guy that was well in the 200s and in ISO and hit 39 bombs in 2023, a guy that perennially exceeded expectations. Last season, after the injury in the World Series, he got hurt. He struggled last season. And so far this year, I mean, listen, he's got, 27 ribs in 56 games, 7 homers, 5 stolen bases, but he's hitting .208. So, you know, that's sort of the mixed bag there. The barrel rate is high. It's up there. It's about 14-15%. His average exit velocity is near 93 miles per hour, which is a career best so far, but the bat speed's still low. It's similar to last year. It's very middling, about, you know, middle of the road percentile. So I don't know. I think between him and Simeon, I think just, you know, age-wise, and power, and the fact that Garcia still steals some bases, I think Garcia has a bit more value than Simeon. I think Simeon is going to just end up being a bust all around this year.
Yeah, you know, age catches up to people differently. That bat speed with Adolis is interesting. I attributed it to an injury last year and then being out of it. And so I kind of wrote that off and thought with the Rangers quote unquote competing this year, he was going to have a big year. And where his draft cost was, I thought not many guys can get 100 RBIs and, you know, 15 steals in that draft cost. So I do have a lot of Adolis, and I do like the barrel rate. I like the speed, but when you talk about bat speed declining for a guy that already had a lot of swing and miss, those fastballs he was hitting, now maybe he's not catching up to, and maybe, you know, if he hits, maybe he's what Kyle Schwarber was supposed to be. He can hit, you know, 25, 30 bombs, but hit you 210. Hopefully he gets the power going. With the barrel rate, I would project that it should pick back up. He's probably getting a little unlucky, but the batting average is not going to get over 220. So you got to eat that somehow.
A couple other players on rehab assignments or about to hit them. Actually, you've got a trio of Orioles, and these guys will, you know, about saviors, but I think they'll be very, very helpful. One of them we mentioned, Tyler O'Neill, who's on his second consecutive stint in the last month. You got Colton Cowser coming back from the hand, and then Jordan Westberg as well. He had a little slowdown in his recovery, a little setback, but he is now back on track. All three of these guys should be back within the next 5 to 7 days. And then you've got Christian Encarnacion Strand for the Reds. Parker Meadows is about to be in his rehab assignment. And then you've got Ha-Seon Kim, who has yet to debut for the Rays. Him and Jake Mangum are supposed to return to the Rays sometime in June. So anyone there from that list, we can even throw Noel V. Marte on the Reds, who is a little behind track of Encarnacion Strand. But Cowser, Westberg, Tun, CES, Kim, Mangum, Meadows, anyone there, and Noel V. Marte, anyone there that interests you, excites you to stash?
Yeah, I'm Colton Cowser. I had stashed on a big team. I believe he's going to have hopefully a big second half of the season. He was somebody I liked in draft season, and they were playing him every day. Please don't slide headfirst into first base, kids. It doesn't work out for your thumb. Mm-hmm. I did pick up a CES share last week, right? Maybe two, cheap, trying to kind of stash some power. You know, corner's been hard to find. First base has been kind of gross, so trying to do that. You know, Ha-Seon Kim is going to be usable. If anybody is stashing him, I don't know if it's worth the payoff, but he'll be very usable. And Parker Meadows is really interesting. You know, speed, power. The thing with Parker Meadows, he wasn't very good last year. So if people are projecting him to be much better this year, coming off that injury, it'll be interesting to see if he's playable, because that Detroit lineup is all of a sudden pretty deep. And does he get every day at bats? Does he platoon? It'll be interesting how that happens. So the Orioles need the help, you know, obviously with Westberg, Tyler O'Neill, Cowser, you know, Brandon Hyde was the scapegoat, poor manager there for probably one of the worst run front offices that I've seen in a while. They basically missed their window that slammed shut pretty quickly, and hopefully they can be get it together. But that team's fun to watch, and I like to root for them. But yeah, Cowser for me is the number one as far as answering your original question long-windedly. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You're talking to the long wind king over here. I'm looking at the first base leaders. You know, Nathaniel Lowe is somebody I added on a team around 250 ADP, and his average has dropped considerably. He's hitting 220 now, but everything else is up there as far as, you know, he's hitting bombs. He's up there among the first base leaders in home runs. He's got eight. He's driven in 34 runs. He's tied for fourth among first basemen. The guys we expect production from, they're getting it done. It's, you know, your Pete Alonso's, Freddie Freeman's, Josh Naylor's, Bryce Harper's. But then there are some of those late round surprises and some of the fab guys. I mean, the other top first baseman there this season so far, and, you know, listen, some of them have cooled off a little bit, but it's Spencer Torkelson, it's Nathaniel Lowe, it's Tyler Soderstrom, and Ty France and Jonathan Aranda. So, I mean, Jonathan Aranda just continues to absolutely mash. He's still hitting 315 with an OBP near 400. And Ty France got 30 RBI. So some interesting names there at the position.
Man, I got to give the Twins some credit. Not Rocco, because I can't stand Rocco, but the front office picked up Ty France off the, you know, the scrap heap, and they said he's going to play and he's usable, and he's been really good. So good for them on that. And I wish I had some more Ty France and less Jose Miranda in draft season.
We've got a few other guys here. We'll save them here for the end, because they're closers, right? Closers at the end. By the way, make sure to put all closers at the bottom of your lineups, especially if you play NFBC. Have your starters at top, the closers at the bottom. It does make a difference. You will end up with, on average, 2.4 more standings points. So make sure you get that all set properly. Let's talk about offenses through the first third of the season. And at the end of April, beginning of May, I put together a little thing, which was basically a team-by-team, series-by-series grading setup. So where every series had a possibility of a max of like 5 points. So if you got a good offense like the Yankees going to a team that pitches poorly like the Athletics, and it's in Sacramento, that's kind of like your top graded matchup. And then if you've got, say, the Royals going to play the Twins, it's in Kansas City and it's tough Minnesota pitching, that's more like a 2, 2.5. And so I ran that exercise for the entire month of April to come up with a total score. And then I've done it again in May. And so just looking back to how things went in April, if you recall, the Cubs had the toughest on paper schedule in April. Yet in April, they crushed it in April anyways. And then in May so far, they were the highest graded per the system, and they've been up there. So, you know, kind of like a top 3 to 4 offense. I think they lead the league in runs scored, or at least top three through the first month of the season. Of course, the trio of Kyle Tucker, PCA, and Suzuki have been really making that happen. But, you know, the other teams there that have also, you know, that were graded highly for April that have been doing well, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Angels have been a surprise. And even Houston have been doing it without the services of Yordan Alvarez. We've seen Christian Walker's bat wake up a little bit. As soon as everybody was down on Jose Altuve, he had a 2-home-run game against J.P. Sears and the A's. But then let's talk about some of these strugglers. Three teams that had really strong matchups for the month and, you know, really just struggled. I mean, you've got the Baltimore Orioles. We've talked about what a mess they've been. But what about the San Diego Padres and also the New York Mets? I mean, the Mets so far in May are bottom third in the league in runs scored. They had a very nice set of matchups. So what's going on with those two teams, and anything to glean on for the coming month?
You know, the Padres were kind of they have a really good top half of the lineup. The bottom half is kind of over excelled for the talent wise. Gavin Sheets has been a revelation, been a monster. I know Cronenworth was hurt for a decent amount. So a lot of it depends on health. And once one or two key guys struggle, they're going to struggle. You know, some of the other teams, what you mentioned, the Mets have struggled, a lot of swing and miss. You know, Soto hasn't got his feet under him yet. I'm sure he'll be fine. You know, it's interesting the data you have here. You know, you have the bad offenses are always going to be at the bottom of this list, but then you have some pretty good offenses that have struggled that are at the bottom, or some mediocre offenses that have overproduced at the top. So it's interesting data to look back on and to kind of help you look forward. So I like it a lot.
And for this month, and it'll be out actually today on Thursday for gut feelings for week 10 here, is, you know, I ran the same exercise, and what we're looking at here is the, things are looking good for the Yankees, for example. Like their schedule, them and the Dodgers, ironically, they have the best schedules coming up for the month of June. But keep in mind, something that I've tweaked a little bit for this format, for this month, is included the strength of the offense just a touch more, because I think that's something that was missing in my formula the first time around. And so I'm hoping to be more accurate, this month. But, you know, last month, I mean, the Cardinals, sure, they had a tough schedule on paper. It looks like they might have one again, but those guys are really gelling. They're really hitting well. So they're a team that can possibly exceed expectations. But, you know, the Yankees, they're going to get an incredible stretch here where they're going to be facing four series in a row. It's going to be the Angels, the Orioles, the Reds on the road, and the Athletics. So that's really nice. I mean, the Mets have a really good first half of June. They're going to face the Nationals. They're going to get the Rockies six times, three of those at Coors in the next couple of weeks. Maybe that's something that could spark the bat of Juan Soto.
Yeah, yeah. If you really want to get your hitters right, just face the Orioles rotation. It's kind of been the go-to get well team this year so far. You got to love those Yankees. Those four teams they're playing. Actually, the Reds rotation's been pretty good, but they should be able to score quite a bit of runs in that stretch. And getting Jazz back at the same time should help that as well.
Yeah, there are a lot of those. There are a few of those teams, like the Reds, that are very tough to quantify in this formula, because the pitchers are good. And of course, part of this is we don't know how the rotations are going to shift. And if a team that comes up against the Reds in a three-game series, are they going to face, say, the murderer's row of Hunter Green, Andrew Abbott, and Nick Lodolo, or do they skip those guys, get, you know, Brady Singer and Nick Martinez or something like that? Even then, those guys aren't awful and could have some good stretches. So Cincinnati is usually like a sort of a neutral matchup. I think the park balances that out. But then, of course, when the Reds are on the road, a little bit tougher for the opposing hitters. Looking at other things from another perspective, the A's are, we see how Sacramento has played. We see how the Tampa minor league park, George Steinbrenner Field, is played. The A's are going to have two all home weeks. One of those is going to come next week, and they're going to have another one in the last week of June.
Yeah, that could be some fun. You could look at some balls flying out as it heats up Northern California. The temperature up here is still pretty mild. It has not heated up yet, but that it'll be really interesting this next week, how it starts to play, if it plays even smaller than it has been, or if it kind of levels out. And I know the schedule is kind of front loaded with home games, so they weren't a lot in the middle of the summer. Same thing for Tampa. So these summer games could get pretty disgusting as far as pop-ups flying out for home runs. I can't say that for a fact, but that's kind of what we're projecting as of now with how that ballpark's played so far.
One of the things I did in this exercise is I looked at team WRC plus for the first month of the season, about the first 30, 31 games through April, and then so far in May, which is approximately 25 games per team. And just seeing the difference of the team WRC plus from month to month and how much things have shifted. And as you can imagine, the Yankees were the top team in April. They had a 135. Dodgers were up there. Obviously, the D-backs, the Mariners were shockingly a top five team in April. They've since dropped back a 123 WRC plus in April and a 102 in May, still above average. But those A's that you just mentioned, I mean, they have been consistent. I mean, even if it's a different mix of hitters that are performing right now, like Tyler Soderstrom has cooled off, but Lawrence Butler has warmed up a little bit. They've been at a 109 in April. They're at a 109 WRC plus, and they're at a 109 again this month. The Astros within that division, they were subpar in the first month. They were at 92. Now they're top five at 123. And we already mentioned the Rangers in that division, an 87 the first month, 72 in May. And then how about those Angels? They went on that big hot streak. They've been doing it without Mike Trout. Taylor Ward has been leading them. They had an 82 WRC plus in April, one of the worst teams in baseball, and they're at 102 so far this month in May.
Yeah, and your Angels, you know, that was your exciting team to start the year. So it's nice to see some production there. You know, maybe Chris Taylor will come in and save them. You know, former Dodger great hit to send Kyron Paris to AAA for that, yeah. Who probably deserved the demotion at that point. But Chris Taylor will not go away. We know that. Another interesting team, Blue Jays. They've been pretty poor, it felt like, throughout the year, but May they jumped from an 89 in April to a 109 WRC plus. So they're above average for May. Vlad's looking like he's getting a little better. Bichette. So that team is not necessarily a target anymore. You know, you look on this list and the target just stands out. It's the AL Central. You have four out of five teams that are well below for the season, the 100 WRC plus. And that's with teams getting better. You know, the White Sox went from a 76 to a 91. Royals went from a 71 to a 96. Whoever thought the Tigers would be the offensive juggernaut of that division. But I saw an interesting stat yesterday. The lowest home runs in the major leagues by far was the Kansas City Royals, 33 as a team, compared to 88 by the Yankees. You want to talk about a delta, that is a huge difference. And that ballpark really seems to be playing extra big. My Jonathan India shares, I've not appreciated that too much this year.
Yes, you would think the series against his former team would wake him up. Hey, he's got a couple of hits. That's about the most we can expect from him these days. Last question on this, Alex Bregman and the impact there with his injury on the Red Sox. They're now a few games under 500. They have not called up Roman Anthony. Jeff Passan had an article that came out today about him and Jack on the Royals. I think both of those guys could really improve those offenses. But they're starting to struggle, right? Like the Red Sox, they've got Carlos Narvaez hitting third and fourth, who is fine, but you know, at some point he's probably going to cool off. He's not going to hit 300 all year. And so, you know, Trevor Story has been horrendous. Like, are these guys going to be a sub 100 WRC plus team in the month of June? Also, their schedule isn't all that nice.
No. And then, you know, the Christian Campbell position change, you thought they would have learned last year with Rafaela. Campbell's been in a deep slump after starting the year really good. A lot of talent, and Rafael Devers has been the best hitter in the major since that slow start. I think through April and May combined, he's lead the league in average and RBIs. So everybody wanted to dump on him. He's been really good. I think the Red Sox will probably settle into about 100 WRC plus. I don't think they're going to drop, but that is a big hole with Bregman. Bregman was playing excellent there, but the schedule's not friendly, and they have a lot of guys struggling at the same time, as well as Tristan Casas being out. I think Eric Sogard's playing first base for them. Is that accurate? Or Nick Sogard?
Abraham Toro.
You know, that monster tandem, you know, just fearsome first baseman. The only thing more scary is Lamont Wade on the Giants.
It's nightmare stuff there. Weekend matchups, there are a bunch of teams facing two left-handed pitchers over the weekend. We might consider benching. But before that, are there any matchups that stand out pitcher-wise or just in general for the weekend?
Well, you have one really fun one. I'll leave you. But I really like, you know, two young guys that are really coming into their own, and Ryan Weathers versus Hayden Birdsong. You never really think of a Marlins-Giants matchup being a fun one, but two electric arms, as long as they can stay healthy and throw strikes. Weathers has just been elite since coming back. Just the stuff looks great. And Birdsong looks like he belongs in the rotation. he just has that one inning where he loses a pitch and just can't get through it. And so it'd be interesting if he can kind of grow into this rotation or if he's going to kind of be that four inning guy that run out of gas. But I really like that matchup on Sunday.
Yeah. And I mean, at some point, I guess when Justin Verlander returns and the fact that Landon Roop has been very solid, that Birdsong spot could end up being Kyle Harrison's, right? If Kyle Harrison continues to pitch well.
Yeah, Kyle Harrison, I really like what the Giants have kind of done this year. Is kind of throwback. And the last guy I can remember the team developing this way was David Price on the Rays. You're going to come kind of cut your teeth in the majors in a bullpen role, a multi-inning role. You're going to get experience in the clubhouse. You're going to be around the guys, but we're going to limit your innings by throwing you two innings at a time in the majors rather than five innings at a time in the minors. And if you look at, just Hayden Birdsong versus, we'll say, Bubba Chandler, the Giants have been able to limit Birdsong's innings a lot more effectively than the Pirates have with Chandler. So it'll be interesting how many bullets in the gun Chandler will have when he comes up. But I really like this way of with Birdsong and Harrison kind of come to the majors, pitch in the bullpen, and then earn your spot to the rotation when it opens up, rather than just being called to AAA and then have the big skills difference against major league hitters versus AAA hitters.
Another matchup here, probably a little bit more, not a star power matchup, but it's Matthew Liberatore, who just continues to defy and not walk anyone and just pitch exceptionally for the Cardinals. He's going to face young fireballer of the Texas Rangers, Jack Leiter. So those two are going to play each other on Friday, or their teams will play each other. The big matchup of the weekend is going to be on Sunday. It is a Spencer Strider versus Garrett Crochet. So that'll be a fun one. Make sure to stay tuned for it if you get a chance to watch.
Yeah, Liberatore has just been a revelation this year. Talk about a post-hype sleeper. I was in the bullpen last year, said, manager talk, said he's going to be a starter this year. Took a shot on him in a couple leagues. I know you have him in our ultimate, and just been guy, like you said, doesn't walk anybody. He's missing bats. He looks legit, as a two, if not a one on that team. So, and then you get Spencer Strider versus Garrett Crochet. Does it get much better than that? Just probably two of the top four elite arms in the majors. So it'll probably be an 8-7 game, knowing how that goes, but excited to watch it and, excited for my Strider shares to kind of get back on track.
For the teams that are right now facing two left-handed pitchers, there are going to be seven of them. Actually, you got the Rays, Blue Jays, Padres, Mets, and Dodgers, the Cubs and the Brewers. And as far as NFBC starts and sits, it gets a little tough with some of these guys who mostly face right-handed pitching, but who are left-handed bats. And that would be guys like Jonathan Aranda and Josh Lowe, because they'll probably won't sit both of those games, but they'll sit one of them. So they'll probably get two starts max. Dalton Varsho has been playing out of his mind, but he does technically sit against lefties. So he might also bench. So just make sure that, you kind of keep an eye on that. I think maybe Luis Camposano, as crazy as it sounds, if you don't have a catcher, you can play him in DCs in the deep round leagues. I bench Jake Cronenworth on the Padres, likely only going to play one. Other than that, really it's, the Cubs there with Michael Bush, who you might be able to sit. We'll play probably one to two games. And then the Dodgers, of course, you'll be benching Max Muncy and Michael Conforto. And then Hyesung Kim really has taken on more of a bench role lately. So those are the main guys. I don't know if anyone else stands out.
Aren't you benching Michael Conforto against righties too?
Well, yes, except for he has finally got the bat going just a little bit. You knew it was coming at some point. So now it's happening.
As president of the Hyesung Kim fan club, what are we doing with him on our teams, Vlad? I'm really frustrated. I need the speed, need the average, and they're not playing him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just difficult because the Dodgers are now fully healthy. They've got everybody there. Now that Teoscar Hernandez is back, Tommy Edman's back, there really just isn't room for him. And I don't know what they're going to do, but it does become a really difficult situation for the weekend. You bench him, and then you'll see what happens. But I do think he's potentially a drop this weekend. It might be one that we regret at some point later.
Yeah, because if Conforto's bat doesn't get going, you can see Tommy Edman move into the outfield and then putting Kim at second with Betts at short. But it'll be interesting how that ends up play, because that could be a scary drop at the end of the day.
Yeah, it could very well be. Let's wrap things up. These are things that Dan Thompson will mostly cover on his Tuesdays and Saturdays podcast, but just letting you know, Daniel Palencia closing out games for the Cubs. It's happening. Camilo Duvall, even though Ryan Walker has actually been okay and has been converting saves over the last week, Camilo Duvall was named the new closer. And then Tanner Scott, potentially in jeopardy. He's been horrendous over the past week. At some point, Kirby Yates and Michael Kopech will be back, and then maybe Evan Phillips. So anything there you want to touch on?
Palencia has been, looks like a lights out closer, and you know, his stuff's been great. Walk rate's too high, but picked him up in a couple spots. Excited about that. See if he can keep the job. It was really interesting timing on Duvall's role change with Ryan Walker, as the Giants going through a big slump right now, offensively wise. It seemed like a strange time to do a closer change, because it wasn't like Walker came off a blown save. So it'll be interesting what they're doing there. You know, those the Dodger situation, what can you get done? I don't know. Sorry about the dogs in the background, if anybody could hear that. Yeah, I mean, there's some money to be made here in these spots, especially the Dodger situation, if you can get that correct, if Tanner Scott does lose the job.
The year of the closer just killing you. So that is it, everybody. Make sure, please give us a rating and a review, if you don't mind, here for the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. If you do need some fab help, lineup setting, projections, everything you need over at ftnfantasy.com, go ahead and sign up. We will take amazing care of you. A fun Discord, very informative and helpful. For my man, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.